They say it works when you work it, you know, and that we can only keep what we have by giving it away. Check it out.
Hi, my name is Misty, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers meeting at the NABA Club, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual, in their own personal stories, describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeaker.org, desperately in need, will hear our speaker. And we believe that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them, and I must have this thing too. I'm really excited to announce tonight's speaker, because I remember 2 years ago, this was one of the first meetings I came to, and I saw him, and I thought, oh my God, what a cool guy. And I thought, one day I'm going to introduce him, and here I am tonight introducing him. So I'd like to introduce Rinaldi, a.k.a. Cheese.
I am Rinaldi, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm sober today by God's grace and mercy and the company I keep. Appreciate everybody being here tonight. It's pretty cool. There's a lot of people here, too, so that's even cooler. My sobriety date is February 24, 2021. I got a sponsor. He's got a sponsor. He's got a sponsor. Sponsor other guys. Try to work a pretty tight program because I had a pretty reckless life, so I got to double down on mine. Let's see, where do we start at? Let me kick it off like this. So I got a parents, mother, dad, still together, been together like 30 years, sister, two older brothers. Dad decided to have two kids before that. They were pretty cool. Don't really get to kick it with them. I come from one of those families. We're from Wisconsin, and they like to sit out there in the backyard playing dominoes and drinking and all that. So me being the always curious type, I was the runner. Boy, go get me a drink. Make sure you wash your hands, put some ice in the glass. You know, so naturally I see them laughing and talking, and I'm just like, yo, this is pretty cool. Yeah, I like this. So, you know, the years go by. We went up there one summer. It's maybe my first encounter with alcohol. My mom left her bottle sitting there. Me and my cousin just looked at it, and I turned it up. And I can't remember if the liquor went in my mouth or not. I just can't remember. But I know from that moment on, I was like, I'm going to try you one day. I'm going to try you. Later on through the years, that's exactly what happened. My parents tried to be that family where they wanted the best for us, but they didn't try, they did. So they sent us to private school, which was pretty cool, but it was really closed in, so I was really sheltered. So I would say that during that time, you know, I had maybe 6, 7, 8 people in the class with me, uniforms, the whole 9 yards, so they decided that they were going to send us on a mission trip. This is my first encounter with alcohol. They decided they were going to send us on a mission trip. We went to Honduras, and I had this crush on this girl, and we was always hanging out together. And me and this other guy, we decided that when we got there, we were going to buy some liquor, you know, because I said I was always going to try it. So I tried it that day, and we bought some liquor, and we got drunk right before communion. And me and the girl had fun on a bench. That was my first experience with that. That was pretty cool, too. it was pretty interesting. But we went to communion, and I'm just sitting there super drunk washing somebody's feet. And I'm just like, man, this is weird. And I decided that was the okay experience with alcohol on the first try. It was okay, but on the way back to the States, me and the guy decided to buy more liquor. And fortunately, I got caught with the liquor in my book bag. And got kicked out of school. So my parents weren't too happy about that. That was an experience, too. That was a really bad one. But after that, I went to public school. And you could say that everything changed dramatically. No longer was I in that closed-in space anymore where everything was safe, you know, or you had the teacher right there to help you, and you had your close little knit friends. You knew everybody. It was all groovy, you know. And I went to public school, and that's when, like, I'll say this first. I tried my hand in sports. I forgot this is a very important part. This is the part that carries all the way throughout my process. I tried my hand in sports, and I was on the basketball team. And I sucked. I'm not even gonna lie. I was horrible. But I still went out there and I tried, you know, and I tried my best. You know, everything, I was giving it all. And I remember I was going down the court and I was running, and somebody threw the ball, and the ball just pow hit me in the back of the head, and I just tumbled over. And everybody just laughed. Everybody was just sitting there just laughing. The grown ups, the kids, everybody was laughing. And you could totally say that that just shut me down for the rest of my life almost. And when you talk about fear, that was that fear in me. So by the time I got to high school, I was scared. Scared to death. Scared to meet people. I was scared to go to class. I was scared to play sports. I was scared completely. I didn't want everybody to laugh at me again. You know, that was that moment. I did not want everybody to laugh at me, and it stuck. I remember, I'll say this, when I was a little kid, I used to cry. And my dad would put beer on the tip of my tongue, and I would stop crying. So, you know, all these little thoughts or rundowns of alcohol just kind of rushed back in when I saw this crowd of people. And I was like, whoa, they're not going to class. They're smoking pot. You know, what are they doing? We moved to a neighborhood. I didn't get a chance to go talk to them because I was scared. I don't want to go talk to them. But I saw them. And I was like, man, I kind of want to hang out with y'all. Y'all are reckless. Y'all are rebels. Y'all are mean, you know. So we moved to this neighborhood. And in that neighborhood, I had a little mixture of everybody. We had some Asians over here, some Spanish, some blacks, some whites. And me and the black guy across the street, he came and knocked on the door, and he was, was your sister home? I was like, you don't want to hang out with me? He's like, is your sister home? And I was like, yeah. So I went and got my sister. But after that, me and him became really cool. And he gave me a little courage hanging out with him because he was real outgoing. And I ended up being one of my best friends. But we used to venture around the neighborhood. And I ended up meeting all the people that I saw at school. I was like, oh, wow. I lived in the Meadow Creek District, because I'm from Gwinnett County pretty much. But I lived in the Meadow Creek District, and they all went to Meadow Creek. And I went to Berkmar. But a couple other guys went to Berkmar, too. But I ended up meeting all these people in the neighborhood. And they were cool. And they were just as I expected. They smoked pot. They drank. They skipped school. They had fast cars. It was great. We pop locked and everything else. It was fabulous, you know. And we was pop locking like crazy. Skating ring with the skates around your neck, you know, in the corner pop locking and stuff. You know, that was us. You know, I met up with these guys and I got real cool with these guys, and I started to live the way they lived. There's been many occasions where we skipped school. The second encounter with alcohol that I had, and this is me talking about the progression, you know. How it progressed, how each stage, when I tried it, I tried to do it differently. And I had a different thought in my mind. First it was fear, and then it came to pride. This is the part where it was just my pride and totally involved in it. We skipped school one day, and we were all at the house. We were in there drinking, smoking, and all that good stuff. And, I drank to my limit because I wanted to be like them. I wanted to fit in correctly. I wanted to, you know, make the right jokes. I had girls there, and I love pretty girls, you know. So I'm just like, yeah, let me get in the aura. These boys are drinking. I'm going to drink, too. And I drank. And it was right when Vanilla Sky came out on, like, DVD or something like that. And I remember having my last shot, and I ate an apple. And I went and lay down on the floor to watch the movie. And I got up, and I walked out of the house. And we were supposed to go somewhere else. I can't remember where we were going. But I walked outside the house, and I just started throwing up everywhere. And at that point, again, that was the second time the fear kicked in. Everybody laughed. Everybody laughed, and everybody said, you can't come with us like that. So I had to walk my tire behind home, drunk, bruised, and everything else, and I went home. And I swore at that point in time that I would find out how to do what I can do this good. You know, and throughout the years, I did exactly that. You know, I'm the first one to say, hey, it's Friday night. Let's go to this club. Hey, let's stop at the liquor store first. Let's get some drink, you know. I would find ways that I could drink more. I would eat more before I drank. I would take snacks with me before I drank. But every single time I drank, I ended up throwing up And I was that person that had those little four stages, you know, the lover, the fighter, the sad guy. That was me. You know, so everybody already knew what was going to happen. You know, Jay G's with us, man. Bring your boxing gloves or bring your essence. Bring something because he's going to get stupid. And, you know, that's what happened. And as I got old enough, trying to find these mixture of crowds, I ended up visiting jail quite a few times. 18 was the first time I went to jail. And I was too scared to say anything because I thought the guys were super cool. And they dropped their weed and their liquor in my bag, in my McDonald's bag, and the police found it. And I ended up going to jail for it. That was the first stint of my recklessness. At that point in time, there's been countless times of getting kicked out. Third time I had to encounter alcohol, where it got even worse, was I was up at those people's house chilling, drinking, smoking pot like always. And my parents came to look for me. And they knew exactly where I was at. And my dad pulled up to that house and he came to get me. And I was out of my mind already. I was drunk. There was reckless. There was no telling me how to live my life because I knew exactly what I wanted because I saw it in everybody else. I saw what they were doing. They had nice cars still, you know, and they drank. They skipped school, so I didn't need to do this stuff. I'm going to do it with them. And my dad pulled up to the house and got me out of the house. When we got back to our house, he opened my door. Me and my dad had a fist fight in the front yard. The police almost got involved. My mom chilled it out. And at that point in time, relationships were wrecked. Mom didn't trust me. She thought I was erratic. Dad didn't trust me. He didn't really want to do anything for me. Only time they really wanted to do something for me was when I got locked up. Any other time than that, honey, you got to get out of this house. You can't be here. And that's fired out through the years. I think for a guy like me, from 18 all the way up until my sobriety day, I've been to jail every year. So there was no real time for me to learn how to actually live a regular life. There was no keeping a job for longer than a year. There was no raises. There was none of that. You know, there was no school. I had to get my GED in jail. And that's every time I got out of jail, I went right back to what I knew. I didn't know nothing else. And that fear always kicked in, so I didn't know how to ask nobody for nothing. You know, I'm not going to ask you for no help. I don't want you to think I got it. I'm always going to dress nice. You know, however I got to get it, I'm going to dress nice. So you're going to have this image in your head where I'm good because that pride is all the way up 10. And after the countless years of doing that, it just kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse to the point where I went to prison for the first time. And when I got to prison for the first time, it was no holds barred there. I caught an escape charge. Drinking, you know. I always said that when I got to jail, for some reason, structure and rules and order always just clicked in. I was a perfect inmate. Perfect. Make up my bed, get up for chow, go to detail and shave and all this other crazy stuff. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. You know, walk in a straight line. It was nothing. I could do that. I could do that. And this is the unmanageability of my life. I didn't know how to run my own life because when I got out, all that stuff was gone. You know, I'm stealing stuff, stealing people's cars, going to jail, going to prison, this and that. You know, the recklessness of my life was catastrophic to a certain degree all the way, man. And it just kept getting worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. It finally got to a point where I started to realize that something had to change. I only started to realize it because the people that I started doing this deal with, started drinking and everything with, they weren't there anymore. You know, it got to a point where friends didn't really want to come pick me up because they were like, well, man, you're reckless, man. You know, we don't want to hang out with you. You don't know how to act. You know, it got to a point where, you know, I would get out of jail. Parents would feel sorry for me. They let me come in the house. And I ended up doing something stupid, like maybe, you know, stealing all my mom's gold jewelry and pawning it, you know. And then having to go to jail to get it back and stealing it all over again 3 months later just to, you know. I can't get it back that time. You know, I did it better that time. I sold it to the gold man. I'm still making amends for that today. But, you know, that was my lifestyle. You know, I would step on the toes that loved me and took care of me. Because I know I could. That's my manipulation, my manipulative mind frame, you know. All right, well, I know you're going to do anything for me so I can step on your toe. And I would do exactly that. But to my friends, oh, it's a perfect friend.
perfect friend. Hey, man, let me buy you something to eat. Spend the night at your house. I won't touch nothing. You know what I'm saying? Let me at my mom's house. I'm climbing through a window to sneak through. You know? But that's how my mind worked. I thought it was okay. That pride. I thought I could get away with it. I figured in my head that you were still going to love me no matter what I did anyway. So I'm just going to keep doing it. That's the alcohol in me, too, because at the end of the day, every dime I stole, it was to go party. Every dime I stole was to go party. I remember waking up in bathroom stalls everywhere it's closed, and I'm laying on the stall drunk. Blackout nights where I'm waking up cussing everybody out. I'm like, bro, you did that. I did that. Yeah, man, you can't come over here no more, man. You got to get your stuff and go. You know, I lived on couch to couch, and it was crazy. A lot of that started to change, like I said, when I started seeing people not there anymore. When I had to talk to my parents through a window for the first time because they wouldn't let me in the house, it was gut-wrenching, you know. It was gut-wrenching. When I had to sleep in an abandoned car one night because they wouldn't let me in the house, it was gut-wrenching. But it still didn't kick in because I was still clutching that bottle. And it progressed, of course. You know, I'm an alcoholic at heart, but I mean, let's just be real. Other things were mixed in there, too. And that just fueled it. That just let me drink more, really, to be honest. And I kept doing that, and I kept doing it, and I kept doing it. And it came to a point in time where I was finally, it's got to stop. And that point in time came when I didn't have any more ways to drink and use. So my life was so beat up at that point that I tried to, I don't like mentioning it too much, but I tried to off myself, you know? And that didn't work. Couldn't even do that right. And somebody asked me earlier about my breaking point. You know, when was that moment when you realized it? You know, I was so full of pride throughout all my years of life that it didn't click in that when I tried to off myself and it didn't work that I had to stop. I was still kind of thinking in the back of my head that, well, maybe I can do something a little bit better this time. I was in the hospital bed, my hands handcuffed to the bed. The nurse came up, and I told her, hey, I got to go to the bathroom. She looked at me and said, hold on. I looked over at the officer. He just went back to his newspaper, and she came back with a bowl probably about that big. And she handed me that bowl, and I just looked at it, and I looked at her, and she was pretty. And I'm just saying to myself, like, man, like, really? And it was the real deal. I had to do that, you know. It was either all over yourself or in that bowl, buddy, handcuffed to a bed. And I did my business in that bowl. And I'm just thinking in my head, what's next? What's next? What's next? And I know what's next. And she had to wipe my behind for me. And at that moment, I said in my head, something got to stop. We can't do this no more. We can't do this no more. I can't do this no more. And, you know, everything from the past started rushing in. I mean, I mentioned some of those moments where the alcoholism totally just took a new form and just, like I said, progressed. But that moment right there was that experience where I said, no. I had that moment of clarity right then and there and said, something's got to change. I can't do this. I mean, what's a pretty girl to wipe you behind for? You strapped to a hospital bed not knowing when you're getting out of jail because you done hit two cars and left the scene of the accident and just parked somewhere and you're screaming, you're the CIA, and people are looking at you like, what the heck was he talking about? Drunk. He drunk. That way he drunk. And at that moment in time, that's when I made the decision, well, if something happens, I'm going to take it. Throughout that private school, my vision of God was kind of disturbed. So I didn't do too much praying back then. But at that moment, I said, God, if you're real, you know, let's do something. And I sat in jail for a little bit. And I don't know how I got out of it, but the judge literally said, I don't want to send you anywhere. I want to send you to prison. I was like, really? And my lawyer, luckily, I thank God, intervened and stepped in, and that did not happen. And I was able to go to a residential program. And I was just like, wow, this really happened. Because, I mean, even in my head, I knew I should have went to prison. No insurance, hit and run, countless times in jail, countless felony charges. I mean, it was destined for me to go to prison to stay there for a little bit. You know, I never stayed in prison long. I always got out, you know, but it was destined. And at that moment, I was like, wow, this is my shot. You know, this is my chance. I got to that residential program, and I'm not even going to say all that stuff I thought about before kind of went out of the window, you know, and I got there and I was like, oh, I got a little freedom. But we started coming here first in that one. And I sat down and I started listening. And I remember Christmas Eve, I said something and somebody came up and talked to me. And at that time, that person is my sponsor now. And a couple months later, I called him and we actually sat down and got to work. And ever since then, things were a lot different. A lot different. I ain't gonna say it happened quickly, but things got a lot different. You know, we worked the steps. I had to figure out that, you know, my life was unmanageable and I was an alcoholic. At first you couldn't tell me I was an alcoholic. I don't think you could tell any alcoholic they were alcoholic at first. But at that point in time, I was like, you know what, dude? Your life sucks. Look at everybody else and look at you. And all that exterior that you're showing, what about what's going on the inside? And at that point in time, I knew that I had no way of figuring out my problem. And when I figured out that I couldn't figure out my problem, I started looking for something better. That's when I was introduced to the second step. Like I said, my vision of God was disturbed. So I didn't know what I was looking for. I'm not going to put a name on them. I couldn't do that because when I did that, that came with rules and stigmas. All I needed was something that was going to help me stay sober at that point in time, in that moment. We looked for them. And I finally said, you know what, I'm going to keep looking for them. And that's when I turned my will over. I said, I'm not going to think for myself anymore. Everything I thought that I knew before, I don't know shit. Because look where it got me so far. And excuse my language, I'm not supposed to be cursing, am I? My bad. When I turned my will over, I turned over my thinking. I said that. I hear it all the time, and I tell people all the time, bring somebody with you before you start thinking. And I bring somebody with me before I start thinking, because my thinking got me exactly where I was at. It wasn't until that fourth step, man, where I could address all the fear that I had built up over the years and all the pride and everything else. When I got to do that, it didn't come out all at first in the first time, but there was multiple times after that. And on the first time, there was multiple things that came out after that. And it all built a very clear picture of what was going on. You know, when I saw that picture, I knew how to take that picture apart. And I took that picture apart slowly by slowly. And it kept us still asking people for help, telling people what was going on. And as I did that, it gave me some freedom, man. I got free, you know. And that freedom felt good, and I wanted more. And that's when I kept getting more, you know, and I sat down and I thought about it. And I said, did I give everything away at this point in time? And for that moment, I was okay with saying yes. And at that point in time, I could move forward. You know, when I asked him to take away those character defects, he did exactly that. He took those away. Still, they come up here and there, but he took those away. And those are the ones that kept me exactly where I was at in that point in time. When he took those away, I knew that the next day, something else was going to happen, but I had a solution this time. Before, I didn't have a solution. Before, I just knew how to harbor it and let it feed itself and ultimately rule my life. But after I found that solution, things got better. When I made that list of people I had harmed, man, it was sad. You know, there were so many people I could have probably put on there, but the only ones that really came to mind was my immediate family and these other certain people. I looked at it a lot of times, and I was like, well, I'm on probation. I'm paying restitution for this one, so we don't have to put them on there. No, I do got to put them on there. No, yeah, you do. Because you're not paying the amount you're supposed to pay. You're paying like $35, and you're supposed to pay $134. So you're really not keeping your end of the deal going. You know, so it's stuff like that when I made that list. And, you know, the way I did it was A, B's, and C's, the ones I can do now, the ones I can do later, and the ones I just ain't going to do. Luckily, there was no C's. And a lot of them, the ones that I could do now, I did them. And it was funny. When I did them, they weren't beat up about it. They said, just keep doing what you're doing. We're proud of you. And that's really cool. It's really cool. Because I'm like, man, yo, it's something like $8,000 worth of jewelry for me. I want my jewelry back, but you're good. Don't worry about that. You know, when my dad's bobbing stole $800 he was going to use for rent money, 100 by 100, you know, but he was good with it. You know, I still owe my auntie $300, but she's good with it right now. She wanted money, though. I'm going to get it to her. I'm going to get it to her. She wanted money, you know what I mean? But she said, take your time. You get straight first. And after that, you know, like I said, that fear that I had, You know, a fear of addressing situations, fear of standing up for myself, fear of meeting new people, just fear. It started to go away because now I'm saying to myself, well, you know that person that you hurt a while ago? Maybe you need to address that now too. Let's put that on your amends list too now. So, you know, I've done multiple four steps because there's more things that got to be done, you know. My sponsor asks me all the time, well, how free do you want to be? Well, today, I don't know how free I want to be. And I don't know if I want to talk to God because I don't want to hear what God got to say. But God sometimes always reaches out to me and says, you need to do that. And when he says it, I do it. But we get down to that 10th step, man. That's one of those ones in the beginning where I thought I could just do it in my head. And I just kind of rolled with it, you know. And things just kept popping up. And I'm just like, well, man, why isn't this going away? I'm thinking about it and addressing it. And I realized that I had to actually see it. You know, I had to see those words. And I'm not going to say I'm the best at it, but I do it. And when I do it, I see the change. I see my attitude towards people. I see how I treat people. And I'm constantly thinking about my intentions and my motives. What are my intentions and motives today? What am I doing? Why am I interacting with this person? Why do I want this and why do I want that? My sponsor used to tell me early on in sobriety, I would come to him with problems. He would say, well, man, you need to change your focus. You're focusing on the wrong thing, man. And slowly but surely, that started to click in. And slowly but surely, now everything I think about is, well, what's your intentions and what's your motives, man? Are you willing to take the consequences of your actions today? Because I remember back to the first time I took that drink and me and that girl had fun on that bench. I took those consequences. Then I remember the second time I tried, I took those consequences, got kicked out of school. So what's my intention and what's my motives and what am I trying to change in me? And after doing that kind of stuff, you know, I found out that my prayer life needed to be just as involved. And that's my 11th step, you know, my prayer and my meditation, because the whole time I had no God, I was him. So if I said that I needed a power greater than me, how am I going to find it? Through prayer. Now, see, the tricky thing about my prayer life is I would try to emulate somebody else's prayer. I would try to pray how they were praying for what they wanted, praying for what they needed, and trying to use it for myself. And it don't work like that for me. It don't work like that. I have a God of my understanding, a personal God that helps me. So I need to pray for his will for me, which means I got to constantly seek him to find out what his will is. Because if I don't ask him for his will, he ain't going to give it to me. And if he do give me something, there might be something I don't want. You know, my great-grandfather always tells me, you know, you see the headline, man. You see it. You want it. Did you read the fine print? Can you handle what comes with it? So that's why I meditate today. I even found out my own way to meditate, you know. And it involves sitting silently, breathing, quiet, clearing my mind, and let whatever come through, and I don't fight the thoughts. I let the thoughts come through because I don't know where the thoughts coming from. But I know it's something good because at the end of it, I can breathe again. And my prayer life has gotten a whole lot better now today. I can feel the change. I can see the change. I can feel the interactment around me. And I'm grateful for that. When it comes down to that 12th step, I can't remember it offhand, but I'm going to read it right there. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, I try to carry this message to alcoholics and to practice principles in all our affairs. My spiritual awakening. As a result of working these steps, I finished the steps early on, not early on, but early enough in. And I remember somebody told me one day, actually, he may not even tell me, I may have just heard him. And it clicked in my head and was like, yes, he's right. And he said, you'll never have to drink again or feel the way you felt if you don't want to. And I would always have these thoughts in my head somewhere down the road, like, man, is this forever? Are you like doing this for real? When he said it, I was like, damn, you don't. Because I like it right here where I'm at. I don't have to go back anymore. I have a way out of things. I can quickly adjust into gratitude just like that. You know, and I didn't know how to do that before. And it wasn't until I came into these rooms and I found out that when you can adjust back to gratitude, oh my goodness. What a feeling you can have. It's amazing where you can just, something can disturb you so much. And a grand sponsor always takes me to page 41 and 12 and 12. And I ain't listen to him at first. I ain't gonna lie. I didn't because I don't like to read too much. But things got rough, and I was like, I need to listen to them now. And I started listening, and now I'm just thinking about it 24/7. And I can adjust back into gratitude. I can think back to where I was at, and I can sit here and say, wow, it is possible. This stuff really does work. But you got to work it. And I had to sit down, and I had to work it. Like I said, I always think about that. How free do you want to be? How free do you want to be? How free do you want to be? I want to be freer than I was yesterday. You know, I want to be freer than that day. I don't want to wait at 10:45 at night when McDonald's closes at 11 and think I can order my food and have you bring it to the table and think it's going to be okay when you don't. I can't do that. I have to switch to gratitude. And I do that today. I sponsor other men. I remember when we finished working and stuff, my sponsor said there's two things you have to do. You have to share in the meetings and you have to raise your hand to sponsor other men. I do that. I do sponsor other men. When they stick around as long as they do, which is cool. They don't, then it's cool too. I still raise my hand. I don't let that discourage me because at the end of the day, it's unity. I heard somebody describe what unity was, man, and it was, you know, giving back what was given to me freely, keeping these doors open, sharing my experience, my strength and hope with another alcoholic, hoping that a message gets through to one of them. There's 50 in the room. If I get one, cool. You know, I did what I was supposed to do coming up here, sharing my story. I was reading through something and it said, you know, telling your story is vital if you're in for the long haul. And I swear to you, I read it last night and I promise you, I haven't cried in a long time. But when I read that, that was another spiritual experience. I was like, wow, I'm in for the long haul. This is cool. Yeah, I felt really good at that point in time. I was like, this is groovy. I never in my mind thought that I could make it to right here. I talked to an old friend the other day, and he was like, what? You're sober? How long? Nah. Yeah. No, nothing? Nothing. Huh? Yeah. He's like, wow. I was like, yeah, I know it. No, I know it. Today, man, I can experience these new things. There's a couple of things that I haven't done. People look at it, and they'd be like, oh. Never done that. I've never bought a car as an adult. Never done that. I mean, you know what it felt like. I bought two in recovery so far. I lost one of them, but I got the other one. It wasn't my fault I lost it. It was the bank, but whatever. I bought another car, and I actually kept it and paid it. I actually have insurance on my car longer than a month. Go figure, you know? Like, who would have thought that I would be able to accomplish something? I have no life skills. I always tell people I'm the late bloomer. I don't want to do this kind of stuff, man. But I'm doing it some kind of way. And it's through other people. It's through the people I keep around me. That right there, it's through my higher power. You know, he's able to lift me back up when I feel like it stopped going. And I'm able to reach out and alleviate that fear. And, hey, man, how do I do this? And how do I stop feeling like this? And we do it. I'm in school still. Expected to graduate early 2025. It's pretty cool, man. I was like, wow. And I want to get my master's at Morehouse. It's always something I always wanted to do, but I never thought I could do that. It was always just a thought before of what I wanted to do. And these yets are starting to come true. These yets are these yets that I'm doing. I asked my mom, I'm going down to Augusta to the dental school to try to start getting my teeth done. I said, well, hey, mom, can I take your truck? Because I got to pay for my insurance by the mile. Where am I at? I got to pay for my insurance by the mile. And she's like, yeah, sure. She said, your sister? No. You? Yeah, if you want to take the car, you can. I was like, what the fuck? Are you serious? I thought it was a joke. She was like, just call your daddy and make sure. He's like, yeah, sure, uncle. Wow, I stole your car when I was like 13. I mean, I went out of town, you know, and it's like, now you're going to tell me I can drive 2 hours away? Unsupervised? Go for it. Hey, mom, you want to ride with me, though? Go kick and go have something to eat? Yeah, sure, let's do that. Great. You know, there's these things I can experience today that I didn't get to experience before. I'll say this. I remember I was sitting in a meeting one time, and I said that I've never experienced God before throughout my whole life. And I was just maybe a couple months ago. I said, I've never experienced God before. And then my sponsor comes back with, he wasn't talking directly to me, but he said it. And he said, you didn't know you were experiencing God. And I can look back at all the trials and situations I've been in. And I've been in some real risky situations. And I didn't see that I experienced God at every moment of the way. I just had that blockage up where I couldn't see it. And now that the blockage has been removed, I can see him in every moment of my life. You know, I see a gray owl and I'm just like, oh, that's God. I see a number, oh, that's God. You know? But, you know, that's how I got to stay in gratitude, you know, because gratitude is what pretty much saved my life. And if it wasn't coming in these rooms and actually being just engulfed in love, when they say that they'll love you until you learn to love yourself, it's a true thing. And that's why I keep coming back, because it keeps getting better. There's no way that I can say I haven't experienced the promises. And sometimes I can experience them in a bad way. I'm just going to buy this. I got $100. I'm going to spend 70 of it on clothes, and God's going to take care of it. Whoa. You got to watch for that selfishness, dishonesty, and self-centeredness, because it's a real thing. Early on, my sponsor had me read 84 to 88 in the beginning and the end of my day, and I didn't do it until it got real vital, until I see why. And today, I see why it's true. And I have to wake up and I have to remember that my life is not my own, but my life is of service. And when I can remember that, I can get out here and get useful. But that's my story. Thank y'all for coming. And
Thank you for your experience, strength, and hope. That really touched me, and I'm proud to call you my friend, and I'm thankful to have you in my network, sir.
Thank you.
Absolutely. That was good. And we've asked Rishon to give out the chips. Woo, Rishon!
I'm an alcoholic.
I love it when you guys are in the house. I love it.
We have a chip system to mark our time sober. The white chip is a 24-hour chip. If you're just coming back in and you're coming back after more research, we offer you a white chip. Does anybody need a white chip? Anybody else? Anybody got 30 days for Anybody else got 30 days? Anybody got 60 days?
Go, Chris!
Alright, let's keep the train moving. Anybody else with 60 days? 90 days? Anybody with 6 months? Anybody with 9 months? I got pregnant for a year. Anyway, anybody with a year or multiple years? A year or multiple for Serenity Boom?
There we go.
Hey! Hi, my name is Misty and I'm an alcoholic.
What you do?
Hi, this is Two. I'm getting encouraged by the grace of God and the company I keep. Well, you know what I hear and say it all the time. Get a sponsor. Work the steps, and service work. Service work is huge. And you guys, thank you so much.
Anybody else with a year and multiple years? Anybody want to reconsider on the white chip?
How come?
Because you could be your last chance to reconsider.
Thank you. Thank you, Rishon. Thank you one and all for joining the Blue Chip Speakers meeting tonight.
This song goes out to 12 steppers all around the world, as well as to those who have gone before us and to those who may be on their way. They said works when you work it, you know, and that we can only keep what we have by giving it away. Check it out. Okay, this song is gonna help you with your evolution. Only if you're sick and tired of the pollution. The steps that we take are all of our solutions. They will even help you make your restitution. The steps can eliminate the negativity and at the same time accentuate the positivity. You may even comprehend the word serenity. Now we're gonna take the steps to our best ability. And the very first step is about a surrender. Hey, you may even be a first time offender, or you may be coming back from your last bender. But welcome to the club, you still can be a member. And step two, that's a power that restores sanity. It's greater than yourself, it's not about your vanity. Don't forget about the pain that brought you calamity. Now you owe it to yourself to take responsibility. When we get to step three, it's time to make a decision for our will and lives to undergo a revision. No longer do we have to feel a sense of division. We're on a new journey, so watch out for collision. Steps one, two, and three helps you build a foundation. But don't forget to cancel all reservations. Welcome to your new life, here's your invitation. But more will be revealed, what a revelation. Come on. We take the steps, we learn to free our mind. We practice principles so we can redesign. We keep it real simple, just a day at a time. We wake up in the morning and we're ready to shine. Hey. It's a natural high, and that's a matter of fact. Come on. We know deep inside there's nothing we lack. Come on. We live in the moment, cause that's where it's at. Come on. It works when you're working, so keep coming back. Hey. Step four is where you're gonna take your inventory. Now we're looking for the truth, not for fame and glory. Just put it down on paper, there's no need to worry. It won't be very long before you tell your story. And step five, take your fourth step and share it with another. Chances are you did some harm to your sister and your brother. The same thing goes for your father and your mother. Now we're living in the light, we're not hiding undercover. Step six is how we deal with our character defects. No longer are we twisted, now we're coming correct. We're building character and we can feel the effect. Now we have a second chance to get ready, get set. In the seventh step, we learn about humility. We recognize our shortcomings and we find stability. But we gotta keep it real and keep it in reality. That's why we take the steps to our best ability. Come on. We take the steps, we learn to free our mind. Come on. We practice principles so we can redesign. Come on. We keep it real simple, just a day at a time. Come on. We wake up in the morning and we're ready to shine. Hey. It's a natural high, and that's a matter of fact. Come on. We know deep inside there's nothing we lack. Come on. We live in the moment, cause that's where it's at. Come on. It works when you're working, so keep coming back. Hey. And step eight, we make a list of the ones we did harm to. We're cleaning up the past cause it's something we must do. It takes willingness and we suggest you follow through. What you're about to do is gonna change your point of view. Now in the ninth step, it's time to mend some fences. We step up to the plate about our past offenses. If we're gonna make it right, we drop all defenses. By now we have begun to regain our senses. The tenth step is all about the application, so that we can learn to face in this situation. Remember that it's not about a graduation. You know the tenth step is really a continuation. Step 11, we begin to practice meditation. It guides us through the world like a navigation, and we're not afraid to ask for the inspiration. But we gotta keep it moving, there's no hesitation. And step 12, we practice principles in all our affairs. We try to be of help, especially when we share. Now we're living consciously, we are awake and aware. So take this message to another, let them know that you care. Come on. We take the steps, we learn to free our mind. Come on. We practice principles so we can redesign. Come on. We keep it real simple, just a day at a time. Come on. We wake up in the morning and we're ready to shine. Hey. It's a natural high, and that's a matter of fact. Come on. We know deep inside there's nothing we lack. Come on. We live in the moment, cause that's where it's at. Come on. It works when you're working, so keep coming back. So there you have it, steps 1 through 12. Remember, you don't have to step alone. We step together one day at a time. And no matter what, we keep coming back. So until the next time, peace in, peace out.